Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're a baby boomer, you're in or nearing retirement, but you're also expected to live longer and healthier than preceding generations. So what do you do with all that time? That depends. And that's at the heart of a series of stories shared in a new book by veteran broadcast journalist Jane Pauley. Jane Pauley made big headlines in 1976 when she started a 13-year stint as co-host of Today on NBC. She made headlines again in 1989 when she left that job. She went on to anchor Dateline NBC for 11 years and hosted her own daytime program, The Jane Pauley Show. She also created the award-winning series Life Reimagined Today, which has aired on Today since 2010. And she has written two books, the first a memoir entitled Skywriting, A Life Out of the Blue, and her latest, Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. Jane Pauley is in town today for an event at the Thurber House. For more information, you can go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. She joins us now in the All Sides studio. Jane Pauley, welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be in the All Sides studio. It's really a pleasure, Anne.
As I read the book, I kept returning to the title because the word calling kept changing from a noun to a verb, as in my life is calling for me, as if there's a life out there that the reader hasn't met yet, and it's looking for me.
Yeah. That's, I think, in my mind, at least 85% of the meaning is your life is calling. How will you respond? Though the 15% for some people who have a calling or would like to find one. So, but mostly it's your life's calling. What are you going to do?
What are you going to hear? What should you be listening for? The book is filled with stories about people you've interviewed for Life Reimagined Today segments. How did these stand out for you?
I have found those stories with our team many, many different ways because I've not invented this. I've interviewed 36 people for the series. Not all of them are in the book, but there are people who have been there and done that. I come to this with a long history of interest. I'm kind of future-oriented, and my husband calls me a change agent. Change comes easily to me. I'm optimistic about the future. I kind of look forward to change. Not everyone does. But it wasn't difficult to find people who are my age, give or take 10 years or so, who have already been there and done that. We began using the word reinvention. My partner is AARP, and they did a research that discovered that reinvention is kind of an off-putting word for some people. And I
knew
that.
Sounds like work.
It sounds like work. It sounds like you're supposed to be somebody other than who you are. Hmm. And life reimagined was more what I envisioned anyway. And when I heard that word, reimagined, I feel like a deep yoga breath. It helped me explain to someone the scope of what the future might look like for them. And a reimagined you is far different than a blank, you know, extreme makeover. Though you can have one of those too if you want.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Jane Pauley, former co-host and anchor for NBC and creator of her own series, Life Reimagined Today. She has written two books, Skywriting, A Life Out of the Blue, and we're talking about her latest, Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. When you think of a second act, do you need to be thinking about it before it arrives, or can you give it time to percolate after you retire? I guess I'm asking if you saw a pattern among the people that you wrote about and have reported about as far as how that reimagination occurred.
Of the 36 people that I have interviewed so far, only one approached it as a process. And I have at home a shelf full of books about a career transition, reinvention, midlife, and all of the dozens of ways to, they're all are rewords, rewire, renew, redeploy, whatever. And so the 6 steps, 5 steps, whatever. I haven't written a how-to book. It's not an advice book. It's more show and tell. So these are people who have done it, but only this one guy left. He took a buyout from a company, kind of youngish, very fit. His email handle is Speedwalker. So even though he was in his late 50s back then, now he's closer to 70, had a long life ahead of him and hired somebody to help him work out his themes. Having done that and found 8 themes, he still didn't have a clue about what he was going to do. And one day, noticed the battalion chief of the local volunteer fire department was out front of his house. So he's curious, what's up? And they fall into a conversation. The battalion chief was checking fire hydrants, nothing more than that. But at the end of the conversation, says, well, have you ever thought about being a volunteer EMT? And his themes, helping people, not wearing a tie, doing something outdoors, working with a community, whatever the themes were, it all lined up. And he has since been a volunteer EMT in Maryland. So did that come from a process? It did, sort of. But everybody else came in more numerous ways than I can describe. I say in the book, I do know the secret to reinvention. It's that there isn't one, or rather, there isn't only one. There are people who weren't looking at all, and it tapped them on the shoulder.
And there were people that come from great heights, you know, great jobs, executives, and that kind of thing. And then you also write about people who found their way coming up from the bottom, so to speak.
Well, Orlando Ward, who is an executive with Volunteers for America in Los Angeles, I think, was the only person to come up off the streets of a homeless shelter in Skid Row in Los Angeles. He was one of those people who lived in a box, had a drug addiction, probably mental health issues, and for many years was skidding down to Skid Row until he was able to pull himself up. So one of my stories is like that. Another they're all my favorite, but Sue Halpern, who's got 50 IQ points on me, was a Rhodes Scholar and a Guggenheim Fellow, and she's a college professor in Middlebury in Vermont. But she experienced life in the most ordinary of ways that anyone would relate to. As she puts it, she said, we all get into our routines in life until something shakes us out of that routine. And in her case, it was something many of us will be familiar with. Her daughter left for college. And her husband has a job that keeps him on the road about 5 days a week. She said the silence in her house was like a noise. And she had this time, more time. She still is a college professor, but there was more time in her life. And she looked at it like, and this kind of surprised me, a gift box that she could fill any way she wanted. So what did she do? She's got a dog who was bored. Nobody in the house looking at her like, yeah, you again. An outdoor dog, never been on a leash. And she looks up, what's it going to take for me to train my dog to be a therapy dog? So her reimagined life was training Pransky to pass the certification test, and there's only one grade, perfect. And he'd never even been on a leash. But passed the test, and for 4 years, every week, 2 hours at a time, they visit old people in a nursing home. That's her reimagined life. I asked her, was that a little out of your comfort zone? She says, I would call that way out of my comfort zone. But that's what she was looking for. She wanted to learn something new, to do something new. I think the important thing, one of the big takeaways of the book, which I had to learn because it was the opposite of my idea when I wrote Skywriting 10 years ago. It came out, my memoir. The idea was a journey of self-discovery that would look backward. And I'm not a backward-looking person. I'm not nostalgic particularly. And I don't remember anything. I have the memory of an Etch-a-Sketch. So it was a little odd that I was writing a memoir. But the idea was predicated that if I went backwards and connected my own dots, it would point me toward my future. There's a number of experts in the book. I'm not one. Hermínia Abera is a professor whose research in careers I've been following for many years. Why do I read the Harvard Business Review? I don't know. But I do. It's a kind of recreational reading. So I extrapolate from her career transition research into the midlife transition. And she says, more do, less think. And I was totally think and not enough do. Hmm. And that is a theme in the book.
You mean just try it?
Just try it. Now, be prepared for it. So you ask the question, does this require, you know, preparation in advance? You know, people who take the time, you know, the phrase just do it, this is not
We're not talking about just do it.
If you started a business, for instance, and the majority of new businesses in this country today are being started by people who are over 50, and more successful businesses are being started by people over 50 and creating more new jobs in the as they're doing it. But if you wanted to start a new business, you've got to do a lot of homework. You've got to learn, you know, how to do spreadsheets. You know, maybe someone's got to teach you Excel. You've got to find out, is there a demand in your community for the business that you aspire to attract customers to, or is it already a saturated market? There is a story that's not, it's not in my book, and I can't remember the name, but she was an Ohio broadcaster, I think in Cincinnati, who started a flower business, flower shop, very successfully. But the upshot of the story was that another person is describing, I love flowers. I've always loved flowers. I wanted to do something with flowers. So I opened a flower shop. It was running a business. I had to satisfy customers. I had to get up before dawn to go to the flower market. You know, things wouldn't arrive. There were problems. I had payroll. I had personnel. I like flowers, not running a business. So another thing that the experts say is test and learn. Learn, I've already talked about.
Yeah.
Test whether your idea is a good fit. Can I tell the alpaca story?
Well, after a quick break, but I guess test just real quick, you mean go work at a florist shop first?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. My guest is Jane Pauley. We're talking about her new book. It's called Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. If you have a question for Jane, you want to talk about how you have reimagined the rest of your life, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We both love stories. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So do that. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Jane Pauley. We're talking about the topic of her new book. It's called Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. And she left us hanging kind of with a cliffhanger about the alpaca story. We were talking about trying something out before you make a leap to that change. And the alpaca story is a good example.
It's a wonderful story. The second story I did, as a matter of fact, Thomas Betts, was sort of an inventor, and he loved sailing, which I don't think he started sailing till he was 25, but he was passionate, sailboat racing in particular. And he invented some kind of device in a sailboat. So he sold his business. Now he's retired young. His wife, Connie, encourages him to find something to do.
We've heard that
story
before.
So he gets a job with a company that had carried his equipment as a salesperson, and he's pretty good at it. So somebody comes in one day, a customer wants to buy a lot of dock line, and Thomas says to him, boy, you must have a lot of boats. the customer says, I don't have boats. These are for my alpacas. And Thomas, who had been looking in that inchoate way, my generation is looking for something and we don't know what the something is. Something in the back of his head said, this is it. He went home that night and asked his wife, Connie, what's an alpaca? So, and she was a knitter. She had taught high school biology, even husbandry, which I only discovered when I was wrapping up and leaving. How these dots connect is fascinating. So they Googled alpacas and they did some research, and the guy that bought the alpaca line agreed to let him manage his alpaca ranch for some months while he did something. It was his test and learn opportunity. Without investing, without quitting a job, without investing in, because alpacas are expensive, for 9 months he discovered he loved it. He loved the work. I ask him if, as it says online, that alpaca poop doesn't smell, and he says, well, it does. So, you know, not everything you read online is true. But it fit him. It suited him perfectly. And this is the wisdom about just follow your passion. What was the first thing he did when he invested in his first 7 alpacas? Because they can be expensive animals. He sold his boat. So much for follow your passion. And today he's a happy rancher. And for someone who, like me, couldn't answer the question, what's your passion? I could barely answer the question, what's your hobby? Do you have any outside interests? I love those stories. It was totally serendipitous.
But that just tells us that you can have more than one passion, or that through your life it can be a series of passions.
Well,
or a series of hobbies, or whatever you want to
call it. Yeah, I've Ann Tuval from the Thurber House brought me over here, and I asked her what her background was, and she was a art history major, and had mentioned ceramics, and now she's at Thurber House, and that's literary. But I said, I have a wheel. A couple of years ago, someone mentioned they were taking pottery classes, and a little voice in the back of my head said, I want to do that. I'm not a crafty person, and I'm bad. I'm untalented, but I love doing something with my hands. But, Anne, I the question in my career that I dodged, you know, for 30, 40 years was outside interests, hobbies, and stuff. I didn't have a good answer to that. I married someone with a list that keeps growing, and my sister too. But I just wasn't a person who had an answer to the question. Until I recently heard myself talking about my book and talking about my stories, Thomas Betts and Betsy McCarthy, the knitter, and Pauly G. I was on the Katie show yesterday with Pauly G, who's made pizza makers. He was the one who said he'd masqueraded as a computer geek for 20 years. Anyway, when I talk about my stories, I hear a passionate person. I hear passion. I think storytelling, connecting other people's dots, for a reason, to purpose, to share this message, is a passion. Hmm. Ta-da!
Ta-da! You started the book and the program Life Reimagined today with the story of the knitter. You threw her name out there.
Betsy McCarthy.
That's a really great example of someone who, all of these people didn't just go into something different to earn a living. It wasn't about that.
No. Betsy explained that there was always knitting in her briefcase. There was knitting beside her in the car for stop signs, stop, you know.
Which cracks
you know,
up.
Knitting, she said, kept her sane. She was an executive in a healthcare firm and making a 6-figure salary, enjoyed the respect of her peers, liked it, you know, analysis. She had interest in that, but she wanted to see if she could make some kind of a career in knitting. The year I interviewed her, it was a 4-figure income, the low 4s. She and her husband downsized as she prepared. Even at that, she said, and Matt Lauer quoted, he repeated this at the end of the segment, You've got to be prepared to face ambiguity and uncertainty without panicking. She also said that she did a lot of floundering around. You know, in my case, I did a lot of floundering around. There's some groping in the dark that's involved in, even in her case, when she knew knitting, it was going to be knitting, and she didn't want a knitting shop. She says, I wasn't interested in running a business. Mm-hmm. But that knitting was something she did alone. She said, I didn't really even know many knitters. So she started teaching classes, and the revelation of her story was that in teaching classes, and I won't tell the whole story because we don't have time for that, but the revelation was that she had a passion that was something even deeper than knitting, and it was bringing people together, creating communities of people through teaching knitting. But I look back on the story, and I'm thinking, the company lost a valuable employee. What if they knew she was a passionate and gifted knitter? The whole time I was interviewing her, she had three tiny needles going the entire interview. She wrote a book called Knit Socks. And knitting socks is these tiny little needles. And I asked her at the end of the interview, did she make us, you know, drop a stitch? And confidently said, no, no. But had they come to her and they said, Betsy, what if you taught a knitting class once or twice a week during the lunch break, she might still be in her career and have met that passion for bringing people together in knitting without leaving her job.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Jane Pauley. You may know her as the former co-host and anchor for NBC, you may know her from Dateline NBC. You may have read her first book, Skywriting, A Life Out of the Blue. Her latest is called Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. If you have a question, or if you'd like to share your own story of reimagining your life, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to go back to that issue, what she'd said about you have to be willing to face ambiguity and uncertainty without panicking. It seems to me that kids nowadays, and I have one, in school, they're being taught and they're being told, you have to learn the sciences. You have to get into STEM. You have to do this. You have to do that. If you want, it's scary out there. We're afraid we're going to turn up in some Kurt Vonnegut novel where we're, you know, falling through a crack into a place where nobody else lives.
So Kurt's from my hometown, Indianapolis. I am very interested in education reform, and care deeply about how we educate. And so, you know, I, as a political science major, my sister was a math major. So STEM is terribly important. And that said, I've already mentioned I read the Harvard Business Review. Mm-hmm. There was a graphic in a recent edition that showed job growth categories shrinking and growing. Which job growth categories? This will surprise you. 750,000 jobs have been shed from our economy in the last decade in technology. What is a growing field? As my husband put it after I told him this story, enter the English majors. Writing, entertainment, artists, music. Because in this media platform space, you know, there are 1,000 different entities. They all need content. So with technological innovation, every innovation puts, you know, some engineer out of work. But it's a new platform that needs a writer. These may or may not be high-paying jobs, but content needs people who can create stories, who can put words together, maybe write a song. You and I are, you know, here we are. We're still working.
Look at us. Yeah. Okay. Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to mention my aunt, my dad's older sister. She's had a lot of different passions, and it's been really great to see her evolve over the years. First, she was a modern dancer, and she was really good. But, you know, her body aged, and well, it's really hard on your body.
Mm-hmm.
Then she started knitting, and had a whole loom and made lots of objects, which was also in Women at Work, which was really cool for me. It was the first wave of feminism. Then she started an artist cooperative in Vermont, and that's still going really well. And then she became, she started on the Arts Council, and then she retired and decided that she wanted to be a grandma and take care of my grandmother. And then she started knitting or quilting at the same time, and has just become completely enamored with quilting. And some of the things she sells and a lot of the pieces she makes for the family. And it's just wonderful to see her continue to develop and her passions. And she does go to some fairs, and some of the smaller pieces are the ones that sell. But she's doing it for herself. And there's one piece that's, her colors are amazing. And then she has one piece that's like an M.C. Escher piece. And if it ever gets done, I would love to see it.
Do you know, if I can interrupt, I want to, I want to be her. You know, I'd like to meet her, but I'd like to be her. But the enthusiasm in your voice as you tell a story is an important thing for me to draw attention to. Because while the woman you're describing is, how old is she now, would you say?
70s.
Okay. What we are doing, my generation, the boomers, you know, anything we do in the millions. So a generation ahead of us, and my Aunt Martha has a story without the arts, a component that your story has. My aunt reinvented herself by necessity when she was widowed young. But, you know, I could just hear her. She's gone now, but she'd say, "What's all this fuss about reinvention?" It just came naturally to her. But my generation is doing what we're doing as we fashion a new perspective on what it means to be in the latter decades of a longer midlife, is we are inspiring younger people like you to anticipate. We're aspirational. We make having the freedom to create and to do this and try that look aspirational. So your excitement in telling her story is why my book will inspire the Gen Xers and the millennials, like I have at home, to just take you know, life in its longer permutations as an opportunity to discover their multiple selves. As Hermione Abera says in the book, we all have multiple selves, and if it's in you, at some point, it wants airtime. And as we live longer, healthier lives, in the aggregate, not all of us will, but more of us will have an opportunity to be introduced to more of our multiple selves. So thank you for sharing that wonderful story.
Beth, thank you so much for that call. I want to squeeze in another one. Tom from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tom. You're on the air with Jane Pauley.
Thank you. Hi, Jane. I love your work.
Thank you. I have a Tom at home. Yeah, okay. I named my son Tom.
Good name. This is just going to be a bit of a ramble, but...
Well, now, Tom, we don't have a ramble time.
I'll be quick.
Okay,
I ramble
right.
Quickly.
Okay.
I'm 64 years old. I spent most of my life identifying as a gay man. I fell in love with a woman, oddly. I've had a 30-year career in video production. We were married December 8th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're in the process of liquidating everything that we have. We both... Each of us have a company, and I don't want anybody to get the idea that, oh, well, you have to have money to do things. She loves to travel. We both love people. We both love doing what we love, which we've been lucky enough to do all of our lives. So we're going to semi-retire, move to India, and start some sort of easy-to-maintain, let somebody else sort of run it business so we can spend the rest of our lives traveling and meeting people.
Do you know, love the Sutherland story in my book. They traveled. They were married young to other people. She was widowed, and he was divorced, and their paths crossed after they were high school sweethearts. And they reignited their passion, but they'd never had an adventure. They raised families, had businesses, never had an adventure. So they traveled, like you're talking about. They loved Tuscany, and they would return to Tuscany. They got to know the area very well when they decided, let's just stay. And he, being a practical person, if either of them can be described as practical, said, if we're going to stay here, we have to have some kind of business. And they opened a cooking school, and the teachers are the local grandmothers. Now, it's a happy story, though. His health, he's got heart issues, health issues. And if I had heart issues and I came from Dallas, which is got the best cardiology in the world, I probably would be living somewhere near the hospital in Dallas, but not them. You know, they don't want to live a life where they didn't take a risk. Now, you and your new bride are going to discover it's hard, and you're going to learn from trial and error how to do it right. But that's how it goes. Trial and error is how you find out how to do it right. So be prepared for U-turns and left turns and new turns, and get back to us and let us know how it turns out.
Tom, best wishes, and best wishes for every success in your new venture. Thanks for that call. Wow, that does remind me of that story. My guest is Jane Pauley. We're talking about her new book. It's called Your Life Calling: Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. If you have a story to tell about reimagining your life, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Jane Pauley. We're talking about the topic of her new book. It's called Your Life Calling: Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. And yeah, we are talking during the breaks. Sorry,
Ann's
everybody.
Really interesting.
Because it's such a depthful, soulful thought of your life calling, and everybody is affected by it, or everybody.
We're all going the same direction.
We're all going in the same direction.
We're going to the future.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're one of my youngest listeners or one of my oldest listeners. Everybody has a piece of this. I kept thinking about, when I was reading the book, I kept thinking about this woman I met in college who told me that she really wanted to be a teacher. I didn't know her that well. I kind of chatting with her in the cafeteria one day. But that her parents were making her become a CPA. And in some cases, it made me very sad, and I felt very sad for her, even though I had the alternate thing where I knew what I wanted to do, but my parents were trying to talk me out of it, and I was not going to.
They wanted you to be a teacher because it was secure.
Yes. They wanted me to be an English teacher because they thought it would be more secure. My dad thought that journalism newspapers wouldn't last because the paper would become too expensive. He had the right idea, but the wrong reason. In some cases, do you think that reimagining is only what has been repressed?
Oh, or just yet to discover, or it could be a redeployment of all of our disparate experiences, skills, because many of us have had different kinds of jobs, or as we've been promoted up through the ranks, learned different things. The things we're good at home don't necessarily get expressed in the job. But at this point in our life, imagine you put all of those things together, bundle them up, and as Barbara Allen says in the book, her new reimagined life is like the threads of everything that she had done before woven in a new tapestry. But what we were talking about before was this rediscovering sometimes takes someone outside yourself to see you, help see you in a new way. Many times what we're best at is that thing that comes naturally which doesn't seem like a strength if it comes so easily to you, and yet your friends recognize it's the thing that makes you special. It's why you are the go-to person. I tell a story in the book about my friend Belinda. Belinda is all energy. She's just a very kinetic person. Loves the theater, loves the art. She knows what's on Broadway. She knows what's on the West End in London, for heaven's sake. She knows who's coming, what's big. And she's a cultural omnivore. We were having dinner with her husband, and the three of us talking. Jeffrey was describing a habit he has in the morning of introspection and writing. And I'm talking, and Belinda's looking glum. She says, I don't have an introspective bone in my body. I don't think. And I said, I told her, I write about this in the book. I said, what you call, and she said, it's all just noise. It's just all this theater, this, you know, cultural thing you're talking about. It's just noise. And I said, it's not noise. When I look at you, Belinda, I see the jazz of life. And I did that little jazz hands gesture. So it's not noise, it's jazz. I gave her a different way of seeing herself. I also gave her permission to be her husband. And so she described every morning, like he does, she writes top-of-the-mind thoughts, a goal for the day maybe. She just writes. And she said, I deliberately do it with pencil and paper because if I do it online, I'm down the rabbit hole. Because that's why she knows so much. She goes online. She finds things. She knows what's happening. Yes. So she, paper and pencil. But when I gave her that jazz, not noise, I helped her see herself in a powerful new way. My sister gave me a compliment just a few years ago. And Anne is the smart one. Very insightful woman, my sister. And she said, I had a gift for helping people see themselves in positive and powerful new ways, which was a new way of seeing myself. But I knew what she meant. My sister once heard herself described. She worked at rose to be the president of a technology manufacturing company, one of the first women in her field to be a president of such an organization. She was described in a large body of people. Ann Pauley is like an irreplaceable crystal in a priceless chandelier. And I thought, well, that's so lovely. What did he mean? What did he mean?
It's a very pretty image.
And Anne said, I knew what he meant. She said, he described a quality I knew I had. I didn't know it was that important or had been recognized, but that I'd always felt that my role in a leadership team was to help other people shine. Now, when she heard herself described compared to a chandelier, she said it was validating, and it gave her confidence to deploy this strength, not only with greater confidence, but in new ways, in her community work, in her church. So having these labels that other people may give us later in life is validating. I don't know what my next stage of life will be. I kind of resist the word act because that sounds fakey and I'm more into authenticity. But I don't know what it will be, but I'll bet helping someone see themselves in a powerful and positive new way will be a good description of it, whatever it is.
I think you're already sort of doing that with your book.
Absolutely. I'm helping people see the future
your life
in a
calling,
powerful new way.
Reimagining the rest of your life. Callers. John, the engineer from Columbus. Welcome. The former engineer, I should say.
Well, I'm still an engineer.
Okay.
Once you go down a path, you always stick with, you always have those experiences to bring with you. I was an engineer for 20 years, PhD prepared engineer. And felt a calling into a helping profession. And when I was 45 years old, I went to nursing school.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I took a leap of faith. I took a leap of finances. I just didn't know what to do. I had used 7 years, actually, to discern my call, to figure out what that meant, that I needed to make this change. And I did. Now I'm a a doctorally prepared nurse practitioner, and I teach other nurses at Otterbein University, and I also have a clinical practice in hospice and palliative care, which is just an amazing, amazing work to do. All of this work is just amazing. Wow.
I am thrilled for you to tell that story. I quote another expert in my book. There's research that shows in MRI scans, which you as a nurse will relate to, mm-hmm. That in test subjects, people ask to imagine themselves in the future. Their brain sparkles, it lights up, and that same pattern as when they're asked to imagine a stranger. So thinking about yourself in the future is like imagining a stranger. Mm-hmm. I can see you 15 years ago, you know, you could never have imagined, I will become a nurse.
No, no. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm happy to meet the stranger that you became. Good
Thank
for you. Great
Thank
story.
Thanks a lot,
yeah,
John.
I did not consider nursing whatsoever in my discernment process, like with social work, medicine, pastoral care, blah, 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 until someone actually said, have you ever considered psychiatric nursing? And it was the president of the American Psychiatric Nurses Association who became my advisor.
I wow. love that story.
That's great.
Congratulations.
John, thank you for the call.
Thank you. And thank you for your work, both of you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Email from a listener. I am enjoying the program with Jane Pauley. I am anxious to read her book. I have been self-employed for 32 years. Because of the economy, I went back to college. Now at 57 years old, I am a respiratory therapist at a children's hospital. You are never too old. There are a lot of things like that what John was talking about, what our listener just wrote about, that people think, well, you're too old. I can't become this because I'm too old.
That is the paradigm that is shifting. And the reason I have a collection of books at home on these topics, as I said, but if they were written 10, 15 years ago, one of them on the back, a blurb on the back says, for people, you know, eager to look mortality in the eye. And I'm thinking, who's talking about mortality? Listen, we're all going to get there. We're all going to get to be old people. That is, I'm not in denial about that. But we have these potential of a decade, 2 decades, or possibly 3 of creative, productive lives, and finding... Now, we've heard people describe new careers, traveling to India. So we've heard people describe things that I think most of your listeners, including the one who's talking right now, that's way beyond my comfort zone. I don't see myself sitting in a classroom again. But many of the people that I have met who have gone back to class with some nerves on the first day of school report to me that, yes, they are older than some of the other people in the class, but they're more likely to have done their homework, and they tend to get A's.
Not so bad. Sandy in West Liberty, you're on the air. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Ann and Jane. This is a glorious conversation.
Let me tell you
real quickly. Mine's kind of a boomerang effect. I'm from Ohio, little town, little Mennonite town. I have a PhD from Bowling Green in literature. In 1999, I left for Dubai. I was asked to teach in Dubai. I was there for 10 years in glamorous, over-the-top Dubai. Came home to Ohio. And teaching all Emirati students, by the way, came home to Ohio, then went back last year for 3 semesters teaching Emirati men. I had taught women before in Abu Dhabi. Huh. In any case, I love glamour and I love health. So what I am doing, I am starting a business. I hate to call it a business. I don't see it as a trade, but I have lost 84 pounds twice in my life. And in 1990, I came to the weight I am now, which is normal. Again, add to that the glamour and the health. Uh-huh. So I am starting this business in which I'm talking to Ohioans who need this so desperately. Weight loss, along with adding writers into the mix. So that is my story.
Didn't see that coming.
starting, I swear, in March or April. That's it.
All right.
Yeah, congratulations. Good luck in your enterprise.
Sandy, welcome home and good luck.
Thank you, both of you, so much. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Rachel in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Ann. I'll try to keep it brief.
I have a Rachel at home, too.
Got a Tom, yeah. Got a Rachel.
I think it's a very Ohio name. When I first moved back to Ohio after like 8 years, everybody I ran into, every other person was named Rachel again after being all over the country and only finding one other Rachel. Anyway, I'm recently divorced. I'm in my early 30s. And, you know, the divorce, it was like 18 months. It drained me completely financially, and I've yet to really recover. And also my boyfriend's also, he's been divorced about a year, and he's also trying to financially recover. We're just trying to even figure out a way to live together. But the other day I caught myself blurting out to him going, you know, and I'm also a knitter, so this story speaks to me as a very crafty person. And it's like, I was thinking maybe I could open an Etsy shop for a little while and just crank out kind of easy, quick things to make just to build up a little fund. And then
Etsy being the online, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Online crafts.
The online crafts.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So I was thinking maybe make a few things on Etsy, things I could kind of crank out easy, but not commit myself to that forever.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of build up a little fund. And right now I'm in sciences. I got a degree in biology. I started a PhD, and then I got pregnant, so that changed everything. And I'm still kind of trying to see myself outside of the sciences. Right now I'm a lab tech, and that's not making, the best of money.
So
you're trying.
Thinking...
I can hear a quaver in your voice as you talk. You are in that phase that Betsy McCarthy described as the floundering. That's part of the process of floundering, groping in the dark. But when you think about it, groping is looking. And one of the themes of my book is, and it came from a headline in a newspaper I saw. Don't know what the story was about. I just clipped out the headline. It said, inspiration is everywhere, but you have to be looking. And I can tell that quaver in your voice, and you're doing this, and you're trying that, and you're a little scared, and you're not sure, but you are looking. You are actively looking. And, even if, the failure of a marriage can really derange you, a lot of people can relate, to that. But the brain learns more from failure than it learns from success. And to only be 32 with, you may have 6 decades ahead of you. And when you're my age at 63, you're going to look back. I hope you remember this conversation we had. And you're going to remember, that she said I had this quavery voice and I was doing this Etsy thing. And who knew that it would ever lead to? Who knows what it's going to lead to?
Who's the stranger you'll
meet?
So
more power to you. Keep groping, trying, and you'll find something. And good luck to you.
Thank you, Rachel. Good luck. Thanks for the call. We're just about out of time.
32 years old, and she's relating to what we're talking
about.
She's
a spring chicken. Yeah. Well, we talked about that earlier before we went on the air. This is something that anyone can start thinking about it now, because you mentioned one misconception, and we can sort of end on this, and you challenge this misconception that we have to get it right the first time.
Yeah, no, it's paralyzing if you think, I'm 63, I've got, I can't make a mistake, I've got so many ideas, but I've got to pick the right one. No, you don't. I had a daytime show. It failed. I really liked it. I would have kept doing it. But I learned so much from that, and I am so proud that I tried something hard. The fact that it was a failure is, my psyche doesn't seem to know that. I'm proud that I had the courage to try something. And if you don't have a failure on your resume, you weren't trying hard enough.
You were just listening to Jane Pauley. She has a new book out, It's called Your Life Calling, Reimagining the Rest of Your Life. She will be speaking tonight at the Thurber House. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org. Thanks for joining us, Jane. Thanks for joining us as well. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.